Radio Libre de Cuenca. Radio Color, la Radio Libre de Cuenca.
Good afternoon, everybody, our listeners of What's the Fact. Okay, today's our 13th program. Okay, I hope you're not superstitious, right? Because this number is going to bring us like really good luck today. I'm sure of that. So let me introduce my colleagues, my foreign teacher colleagues. Okay, Anna, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad, not too bad. Okay, for a Saturday. Agus, how are you, mate?
I'm really nice, man. I feel very good.
Okay, fine, good. Right, so Agus, where can you find us? What can our listeners listen to us?
Okay, you can find us on radiocolor.es.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And where else, Anna?
Also at 106.2 FM on the radio.
Okay, absolutely. And then on Facebook as usual, right? So try to find us, right? So today we'll be bringing you some of the usual sections, okay, that you're already familiar with. Like, for example, grammar, common mistakes, idioms, false friends, okay? But and today's fact is going to be another country, okay? A pretty unknown country, I would say. It's Singapore, okay? We'll get to learn a lot of things about it, a lot of facts. And today on What's the Fact, we will be introducing a new section called Conquenses Around the Globe, okay? I think it's self-explanatory, but just in case, it's basically Conquenses living abroad and telling us about their experiences living there, speaking English, etc., right?
Yep.
Very good, because yes, my friends, it is possible to learn English, to put it into practice, to go abroad, find a job, study abroad, okay? And we encourage everyone to do that. All right, so how about doing a little bit of grammar? Okay?
Of course.
I often get this question, okay, by my students. It's not exactly like a grammar, like a verb tense or anything. It's basically, you know, how or what's the meaning or what's the exact use of wanna, gonna, and gotta, doncha, you know, this kind of contractions. I would say these are pretty informal contractions, right? So first of all, you need to know that you mustn't use them in a formal conposition or if you're in the middle of a conversation with someone at a high level, let's say. In a job interview, we should not use wanna, gonna, gotta, doncha, right? That's more with friends, obviously. Right, that's one thing. Then, what is wanna, spelled W-A-N-N-A? Well, it is the contraction of want to, okay? So, Anna, for example, could you tell us an example with wanna? How do you use wanna?
Yeah, so for example, I might say, I wanna be a millionaire.
So do this, you?
So it just means I want to. Uh-huh. I want to be.
Exactly, right. It's just a faster, easier way of saying I want to be a millionaire, right? But that's just you. I don't want to be a millionaire at all, as you can imagine. Right. How about gonna? Gonna is G-O-N-N-A, right? And it stands for, or it means going to. Now, Agus, could you illustrate that with an example?
Yeah, I'm going to explain what gonna means.
Well, that was pretty clear now. Okay, now I'm going to give you another one. It's gotta, right? G-O-T-T-A. You might not be as familiar with this one as with the other two ones. This is very American, I would say, right? It's G-O-T-T-A. and it means got to. All right, and Anna, even if we don't use this one much in British English, how could you use it in a sentence?
So, for example, you could say, I've got to do a lot of work today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got to do, or I've got to do, that's what an, I've got to do, that's what an American person would say, probably. Yeah. Right, very good. And now, finally, doncha, doncha, that's D-O-N-C-H-A. Agus, you know, how do we use doncha?
We use doncha instead of don't you.
Yeah, I forgot to say that. Sorry.
We can use it, for example. Manu, don't you think that English is fantastic, for example?
Yeah, I do think it's fantastic. Okay, okay. So, yeah, don't you think is don't you think, right? Yeah, that's very good. So, remember, don't use them in a formal context, but you know, anywhere else, they should
there,
be all right.
Is there, if you watch a movie or listen to the radio or whatever, is there.
Yeah.
If you want to be my lover, remember.
Yeah, the Spice Girls. I don't know why, you know, the Spice Girls, you know, keep coming back, you know, to this program, okay?
Because we love the Spice Girls.
Okay, right. So now, that was one grammar point. And now, let me explain to you, okay, the next point is precisely explain to, right? I suppose because in Spanish we use the verb explicar with no other prepositions, right? Explícame, explícale, right? In English, however, we need to use explain something to somebody, right? So we don't say, please explain me the difference between, no. Anna, what do we say? Could you give me an example?
You would say, can you explain this to me? Mm-hmm. So, with two.
Yeah, that's it. So, you know, it's very often forgotten, okay, among Spanish learners of English, but, you know, you must not forget it because it's very, right? So, explain that to me. Could you explain the difference, or could you explain to me the difference between this and that? Okay, good. And now, another grammar point, you know, we're going to be talking about connectors now, okay? These are however and nevertheless, right? However and nevertheless are quite similar. The meaning is very similar, but they don't mean exactly the same, right? Agus, what's the meaning of however?
However means sin embargo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. And what's the meaning of nevertheless?
It's quite similar, but it's not exactly the same.
Okay, it's obviously no obstante. Mm-hmm. Okay, right. So that would be the difference, basically. If you know the difference in Spanish, you know the difference in English now. Something else I would like to add about this is that both however and nevertheless are usually placed at the beginning of a sentence, right? So right after a full stop, right, we say however, and then after them we write a comma when you're writing, obviously, right? So for example, we can say I like all types of pets, full stop, however, comma, wild animals are fantastic too. Okay, and the same goes for nevertheless.
So we can think that however and nevertheless are contrast connectors.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
You explain something, but then you want to say that there is a, it's not at all what you said.
Yeah, you can say something different afterwards.
You're going to say something different.
Yeah.
Contrast. Yeah.
Yeah, and just the last comment about this. Nevertheless, feels a little bit more formal than however, perhaps. Like, yeah, the difference is very small. But yeah, I would say that nevertheless is a little bit more formal, right?
Yeah.
Don't you think, Anna?
I'm going to use it. No, I'm going to use it, sorry. Because I want to improve my English.
Yeah, by the way, don't write nevertheless and don't you in the same sentence, please.
No.
Right? It's quite a mismatch. All right. Good. So that was about the grammar. And now, let me tell you, or let's comment on some false friends now. Okay. The first false friend is choke. Choke spelled C-H-O-K-E, right? Choke. It sounds a bit like chocar, right? But it has nothing to do, right? Agus, what is the meaning of choke?
Yeah, the meaning of choke is in Spanish is asfixiarse o ahogarse. Mm-hmm. So we can use it when we want to say something like chocar. So it has nothing to do with it.
With chocar, yeah. Absolutely. Like, Anna, could you give us an example with choke in English?
Yeah, so, for example, I could say, don't make me laugh when I'm eating or when I'm drinking, I might choke.
Yeah, very good. That's very good. Right. Yep. Now, the next one would be college, right? College, that's spelled C-O-L-L-E-G-E, right? College, not to be confused with colleague, because sometimes people mix them up, right? So college, right? It looks a bit like colegio, right? And it has to do a little bit, but it's not the same, right? A college can be two different things, right? Well, on the one hand, or one thing it means is instituto, or instituto de bachillerato, to be more precise, right? So, and that's in British English. Anna, can you explain what a college is in your country?
Yeah, so when you go to college, that's when you finish high school and then the next stage of education. So high school, then college, then university.
Exactly. So college has an equivalent in Spain, that would be bachillerato or instituto de bachillerato. That's very good. However, in American English, a college is different. Anna, what is a college in America?
In America, they use college to refer to university.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's the next level. So, you know, you might have a misunderstanding, you know, if you don't know the difference well, and you're in America or in Britain or, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not quite the same. Right, very good. Now, finally, dormitory. Okay, dormitory spells D-O-R-M-I-T-O-R-Y. Okay, it totally looks like dormitorio. Okay, but no, it's not exactly that. Agus, what is dormitory? Dormitory. How would you translate it?
We can translate it as residencia universitaria. Mm-hmm. Sería eso lo que vendría a significar en español.
Yep. Yeah, that's it. So, but yeah, it has to do. It has to do because it's the place where you sleep, among other things. But that's it.
But it's not just bedroom, no.
It's not just a bedroom, yeah. Right, and Anna, do you use this word in Britain?
It's not so common, maybe in Britain, maybe more American. Mm-hmm. But in England, like, we tend to say, like, halls of residence, or for short, you say halls. So I live in halls. Mm-hmm. I live in university residence.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. right. Okay, very good. Now, well, I hope you understood the differences, and write to us if you have any questions, okay, on Facebook, you know. Right, how about listening to some good music now?
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah,
I'm ready.
You're ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know.
Today we are going to listen to a very nice song that is called, you know, it's an idiom, and the name of the song, the title is It Takes Two to Tango, and mm-hmm. it's performed by Ray Charles and Aretha Franklin.
Nothing to do with Argentina?
No.
Okay. No,
so if you're ready,
yep,
let's go.
Come on.
Yes, you can get any game on.
that was a really great song, you know, to refill your batteries and, you know, to get you full of energy, okay?
Yep.
Yeah, very good. And it takes two to tango, right? Obviously. And what does that mean exactly? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
So this is a common idiom or expression which suggests something in which more than one person or entity are paired in an inextricably related and active manner, and sometimes with negative connotations. So it basically means it takes two people or two things to do something, and sometimes it has negative connotations. So for example, it could be used in like the case of an argument. So perhaps if someone maybe does something that you're annoyed with or offended by, and you were to say, oh, it was all their fault, I think they're to blame, then somebody could say to you, well, it takes two to tango. So meaning it could be your fault as well.
Like one person doesn't dub that on their own.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously we know the tango is a dance involving two partners moving in relation to each other and sometimes in opposition. So now the meaning of the expression can be extended to include any situation where two partners are understood to be essential. So for example, like in a marriage. And also a bit of history about the idiom. The phrase originates from a song called Takes Two to Tango, which was written in 1952 by Al Hoffman and Dick Manning. So also the phrase was reported widely in the international media when Ronald Reagan quipped about Russian-American relations in 1982 presidential news conference. And he said, for 10 years, détente was based on words by them, referring to the Russians, and not any words to back them up. And we need some action that they, it takes two to tango, that they want to tango also. And since that time, the metaphor has appeared regularly in headlines of international press. And it's also gained currency as a proverb in loan translations in other languages. So it's become common in different languages.
Yeah. Even if tango is a Spanish word, we don't have that in Spain, do we? Like, we don't say, literally, we don't say that. We say, perhaps if there's been an argument, we would say, dos no pelean si uno no quiere. It's the same, it means the same, but we don't use the word tango or anything. We don't have the same metaphor, we use another one. Okay. Yeah, very good. Thank you, Anna.
You're welcome.
Right. Let's see some more idioms. I was surprised to find that there are quite a few idioms in English, namely with number two this time, okay? So, for example, you can be in two minds about something, okay? Which means to be indecisive about something. You don't know what to do, you don't know which of the two things do. So, for example, Anna, have you made up your mind about going to one concert or the other concert?
You know what? I really can't decide. I'm in two minds about it because I like both of the bands that are going to play.
Okay, yeah, very good. Very good. So Anna would be in two minds about that. Okay, excellent. Now, I found another one. It's to be two-faced. Okay, to be two-faced. That means to have like two faces, right? So you're not being honest, right, with some person, or you behave in a different way in front of one person and or another person, right? So for example, Agus, right? I think Brenda is a really lovely woman.
Oh really? She's always very mean to me. Wow. Maybe she's two-faced.
Maybe she's two-faced. Wow, that was yeah. bad. That was ugly.
Yeah.
Okay. Bloody Brenda, you know. Yeah. Brenda, we don't like you, by the way. Okay, we don't like you. Right.
Right. Ivanka, for example, is one-faced.
Exactly. Ivanka is the same way all along. All right. Now, we find another one, okay, that we don't use in the UK, but it could be interesting. I think it's very you know, it's a nice metaphor here. You know, it's to have two bites of your cherry. Okay, to have two bites of your cherry, right? And it means to have like a plan B, okay, or more like an alternative plan, okay, mm-hmm. or idea, right? So, Anna, mm-hmm. have you got the sales presentation finished?
Yes, I think so, but maybe I'm not so sure.
Make sure it's finished and it's perfected, okay? Because we do not have two bites of the cherry on this one, right?
Yeah.
We will not have another opportunity if we miss it.
Yes.
Okay, so we don't have two bites of the cherry this time. All right, that would be one example, maybe. Okay, I hope you enjoy our idioms, okay? They're always interesting, in my opinion, right? And fine. Now, as we told you at the beginning, on What's the Fact today, we're going to be talking about another English-speaking country, right? This is called Singapore, right? I didn't know much about this country, right? And so I hope you learn, you know, quite a few facts from this country, right? From this Asian country, right? So, now...
Let's start with 10 curiosities about it. So, Anna, can you start, please?
Yes, sure. Singapore, you might not know this, but it's a city of not just one island, but 63. Mm-hmm. So the land area includes as many as 63 offshore islands that surround the main island. And these include Sentosa, the largest of the 63 islands, St. John's Island and Sisters Island. So for visitors, that means lots of opportunity to enjoy the sun.
Yeah, islands, yeah.
I really like you, and reading something that is not in English. So I'm going to include Pulau Ubin to the Latin words that you hate. Okay, don't you know that it's the home of the world's first night zoo?
A night zoo?
Yeah,
a
night zoo. Why?
Because Singapore's night safari provides a nocturnal experience like no other in the city. It is also the world's very first night zoo. First opened in 1994, the 35-hectare park features over 2,500 nocturnal animals of over 130 species. Hop onto the 40-minute tram ride for another overview of the park's main attractions. Be sure to make a ball along the 4 interlinked walking trails within the park for a zoo trip like no other.
So another curious fact is that it's a city of waterfalls, but it's a city of man-made waterfalls, not natural, right? So apparently the first man-made waterfall was built at Jurong Bird Park in 1970, right? It drops from a height of 30 meters, and it is said to be the tallest waterfall in an aviary to date. Right, an aviary is a place where it's like a bird park, as I said before. Right, but that's not all. You'll also find the world's tallest indoor waterfall. Right, it's an indoor waterfall. That's important. And it's 35 meters high. It's at the Cloud Forest. Okay. And this huge waterfall is a centerpiece of this mystic conservatory designed to house plant life from the tropical highlands. Okay, and in 2018, that's next year, there will be an even taller indoor waterfall. Okay, to be built at Jewel at Changi Airport, okay? So it's inside an airport, I guess. This new retail and lifestyle complex will feature the Water Vortex, a 40-meter high man-made waterfall that will be surrounded by a lush indoor garden. Wow, so like these Asians, they like it big, they like it, world...
Indoor.
World record-breaking.
Yeah,
okay.
And indoor.
Yeah, and indoor. Okay.
So right. We like football, they like waterfalls, I mean.
Okay.
Yeah, we can talk a bit about the languages they speak. So the local people speak Singlish, so a mix of English and Singapore, I guess. So don't be too surprised to hear Singaporeans adding the occasional la and le to their sentences, which have become an integral part of everyday conversation. So these are just bits of what make the local Singlish vocabulary so unique. So Singlish is a collection of colloquial catchphrases and lingo influenced by Singapore's multiculturalism. So other examples include the Singlish term chope, which means to reserve a seat. And locals often chope seats at a hawker centre using packets of tissue paper.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Singaporeans also tend to refer to strangers, such as cab drivers and hawker central stall owners, as aunties and uncles. So this is an endearing way of addressing older men and women. You have to be careful when using these terms, though, as it can connote the addressee's elderly age. Offend a stranger accidentally.
Okay. I think that's interesting. But, another curiosity is that Singapore pioneered the first F1 night race, held annually since 2008. Grand Prix season Singapore features a gamut of concerts, racing and entertainment activities for Formula One fans and visitors of all ages. The star event, the Formula One Singapore Grand Prix, also made racing history as the world's first ever Formula One night race. The twisty Marina Bay street circuit has largely remained uncharted in the years since. The track's brightly lit floodlights also add to the spectacular night views of Singapore. According to the Formula One, the Marina Bay street circuit also boasts more corners, 23 in all, than any other circuits on the Formula One race calendar.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Again, wow. Great. Also, Singapore is one of the world's greenest cities, right? The city of skyscrapers is also one that is filled with lush greenery, right? Nearly half of Singapore's land area, which is approximately 700 square kilometers, is under green cover, right? Beyond numerous parks and gardens, there are pockets of undiscovered plant life housed in the most unusual of places. For example, the Park Royale on Pickering is known for its hotel in a garden concept and its four-story cascading vertical garden. Wow, that's really great. But that's not all. There's rich biodiversity in nature reserves too. Singapore is home to over 2,000 native vascular plant species. I have no idea what vascular plant species means, but the Bukit Timah Nature Reserve in particular is said to contain more tree species in a single hectare than the total number of tree species found in North America.
Wow, wow.
Well, that is incredible. There are many trees in North America.
Yep.
Well, anyway, so Anna.
Okay, so it's also home to a UNESCO World Heritage Site. So, inscribed as a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 2015, the Singapore Botanic Gardens had a history of over 150 years since its creation in 1859. So it's more than a century older than modern Singapore itself.
Mm-hmm.
Its most popular attraction is the Natural Orchid Garden, which houses thousands of orchid species and known as very important plants. In more ways than one. Over 200 hybrid orchids in this garden have been affectionately named after visiting foreign dignitaries. For example, Nelson Mandela, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, and also celebrities like Jackie Chan. And
which are the others?
I can't say that name.
Su Jun and Bae Jong Jun.
Anna, you always get difficult names. How do you manage to do that?
Yeah, but, I think that Jackie Chan was there. I think it's so important.
Exactly, yeah.
Another interesting fact is that Singapore's first botanic garden opened in 1822 on the slopes of the area now known as Fort Canning Hill. So measuring just 19 hectares, the garden closed in 1829 due to rising costs and was later rebuilt as a fort equipped with armory, barracks and a hospital.
Okay. There are also tons of the beaten track neighborhoods to explore. Beside the history-rich Chinatown, Kampong Glam and Little India cultural districts, there are more colorful enclaves for visitors to explore in Singapore. You will find rows of hip eateries and stores along the Art Deco style buildings of Tiong Bahru, as well as colorful Peranakan style shop houses and traditional food stalls, and Yu Chia Katong. More upcoming neighborhoods include Everton Park, which is home to coffee joints, cafes, ice cream parlors, and other must-try foodie hotspots.
I like that. I really like to explore different neighborhoods, you know, with different, with you know, each one with its different distinctive character, you know, and distinctive food as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think the older I get, the more of a foodie I become. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think.
Definitely.
That goes with age, I suppose. Right. So, well, let's talk about celebrations in Singapore, right? Because there's always something to celebrate there. For example, there are cultural festivals, major sports, lifestyle and arts events held all year round in the city to keep you entertained, right? For example, the annual HSBC World Rugby Singapore Sevens, held in April, and WTA Finals Singapore, held by the Women's Tennis Association in October, hosted at the $1.3 billion dollar Singapore Sports Hub. Right, so that is a lot of money, I guess. Right, if you come in May, fashionistas will flock to the city for Singapore Fashion Week, right? As the region's most anticipated fashion event, past runways have showcased international designers such as Victoria Beckham, Carolina Herrera, as well as local fashion labels like, this is more difficult, Ong Shunungam and, Jesus Christ, Zhejian, whoever that is. Then get set for a shopping spree during the Great Singapore Sale, which kicks off annually in June. In July, for example, foodies, like me, are in for a treat with the Singapore Food Festival, where they will get to savour uniquely Singaporean dishes, as well as the best of Mot Sin, modern Singaporean cuisine, which gives a modern twist to traditional flavours. Yummy, yummy.
Yep. Okay, I don't want to anticipate some information that our guest is going to give to us. Mm-hmm. But we are going to talk about food and also some interesting restaurant because we are talking about food. Mm-hmm. So, okay, hey, Wellspring.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Perhaps now we can talk about something that's iconic in Singapore. Mm-hmm. So you might have heard about the merlion, which is a very iconic emblem there. So the merlion is a mythical creature with a lion's head and a fish tail. What you might not know is that the merlion was partly inspired by the city's Sanskrit name, Singapura, which means Lion City. Wow. This Sanskrit name was thought to have been given by a Sumatran prince, Sang Nila Utama, who ruled Temasek, a settlement on the Singapura island during the early 14th century. And while hunting for animals, the prince spotted a strange creature moving quickly, which was identified as a lion by his advisors. However, there were no records of lions native to Singapore, so it might have been a tiger that he saw. And for tigers used to be found in the wild in Singapore up to the 1930s.
Wow. It's interesting, I think.
Yes. And if you think that's all there is to know about Singapore, then you might have to think again, because there are 10 must-do things and more fun city itineraries to make the best of a trip to Singapore.
Yeah. So if I think we can comment some new things about Singapore, because these were these were some curiosities, but now we can talk about realities of that. So the Republic of Singapore, sometimes referred to as the Lion City, as Anna said, foreign city state in the southeast of Asia. Stamford Raffles founded Colonial Singapore in 1819 as a trading post of the East India Company. Okay, but nowadays Singapore is a global commerce, finance and transport hub. Its standing includes the most technology-ready nation, top international meeting city with best investment potential,
wow,
and second most competitive country, third largest foreign exchange market, third largest financial center, the third largest oil refining and trading center, and the second busiest container port. The country has also been identified as a tax haven.
Okay. Right. Okay. Anything that it gets second position, that's because Cuenca is number one, isn't
yeah,
it?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I think he's the second one. Yeah,
yeah.
Totally, okay. Totally agree. Okay, Singapore ranks fifth internationally and first in Asia on the UN Human Development Index, and the third highest per capita income, like Cuenca. It is ranked highly in education, healthcare, life expectancy, quality of life, personal safety, and housing. Although income inequality is high, 90% of homes are owner occupied. The 38% of Singapore's 5.6 million residents are permanent residents and other foreign nationals. There are four official languages: English, Malay, Mandarin, Tamil. Almost all Singaporeans are bilingual. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the reason of. Yeah.
Okay, so a bit more about the history. Yeah. In 1299, the Kingdom of Singapore was founded on the island by Sang Nila Utama. Although the historicity of the accounts as given in the Malay annals is the subject of academic debates. Thomas Stamford Raffles arrived in 1819 and signed a treaty with Sultan Hussein Shah of Johor on behalf of the British East India Company to develop the southern part of Singapore as a British trading post. In 1826, Singapore became part of the Straits Settlements under the jurisdiction of British India, becoming the regional capital in 1836. And also, after the First World War, the British built the large Singapore naval base as part of the defensive Singapore strategy. And during the Second World War, the Imperial Japanese Army invaded British Malaya, culminating in the Battle of Singapore. When the British force of 60,000 troops surrendered in 1942, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill called the defeat the worst disaster and largest capitulation in British history. On the 16th of September 1963, Singapore joined with the Federation of Malaya, the Crown Colony of Sarawak, and the Crown Colony of North Borneo to form the new Federation of Malaysia under the terms of the Malaysia Agreement. And given Singapore's limited size and lack of natural resources, it was felt integrating with Malaya would provide a route to stronger economic development. And also, since then, Singapore has gained independence as the Republic of Singapore, remaining within the Commonwealth of Nations since August 1965. And then in 1967, the country co-founded the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Lee Kuan Yew became Prime Minister, and the country moved from third world economy to first world affluence in a similar generation. Lee Kuan Yew's emphasis on rapid economic growth, support for business entrepreneurship, and limitations on internal democracy shaped Singapore's policies for the next half century.
Yeah, that's so interesting, but it's so difficult. Imagine to do an exam of history of Singapore. Yeah. With those names.
With all these names. All right. Well, the geography, if you let me talk about it, well, as you probably heard before, Singapore consists of 63 islands. Shall I say it again? 63 islands.
Yeah.
Okay, in case you didn't know that. But basically, these islands used to be surrounded by greenery and nature. But, you know, after Singapore's urbanization started, okay, they lost 95% of its historical forests. Okay. Nevertheless, the purpose of the government is now to recover all this green mass, okay, and they're trying to make Singapore a garden city, and it's already quite green as we heard before, right? So you know, I think they must be doing some good job, right? Talking about the climate. Singapore has a tropical rainforest climate, okay, with no distinctive seasons, uniform temperature and pressure, high humidity and abundant rainfall. Okay, and temperatures there usually range from 22 to 35 degrees, okay, mm-hmm. all year long. Okay.
So that's nice.
Yeah, that's nice, I suppose, yeah.
It rains a lot. But
yeah, but it's quite different from the climate here, right?
Okay, going back to economy. Singapore has a highly developed market economy based historically on extended interport trade. Along with Hong Kong, South Korea and Taiwan, Singapore is one of the original Asian tigers. It has surpassed its peer in terms of GDP per capita. Between 1965 and 1995, growth rates averaged around 6% per annum, transforming the living standards of population. The Singaporean economy is known as one of the freest, most innovative, most competitive, most dynamic and most business friendly. According to the Corruption Perception Index, Singapore is consistently perceived as one of the least corrupt countries in the world, along with New Zealand and the Scandinavian countries, and I would like to add Spain. In 2016, Singapore is rated the world's most expensive city of the third consecutive year by the Economist Intelligence Unit.
See, I don't like that.
Yeah, no, me neither. So, if we talk about religion, I really want to say that the religion that has the most followers is Buddhism, of course, but it's followed by Christianity. But the third one, it's not religion, so I find it quite interesting.
It's curious, isn't it? Yeah. Like after Buddhism and Christianity, like the highest number is, you know, non-religious people.
Yep. Okay. I think it's interesting, but of course there is also Islam there, Taoism, Hinduism, and other religions. Mm-hmm. So
cool.
It's
okay.
A multicultural country, of course.
Yep. And speaking of multicultural, we come to talk about languages.
Yes, so Singapore has four official languages. They include English, Malay, Mandarin Chinese and Tamil. English is the common language and is the language of business, government and the medium of instruction in schools. And public bodies in Singapore, such as the Singapore Public Service, conduct their business in English, and official documents written in a non-English official language, such as Malay, Chinese or Tamil, typically have to be translated into English to be accepted for submission. Also, most Singaporeans are bilingual. English is their common language, and usually the mother tongue is a second language taught in schools in order to preserve each individual's ethnic identity and values. The official languages among Singaporeans are English at 80% literacy, Mandarin at 65%, Malay at 17%, and Tamil at 4%. Singapore English is based on British English, and forms of English spoken in Singapore range from standard Singapore English to a colloquial form, which we mentioned before, Singlish. But this colloquial form is discouraged by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Singaporean Mandarin is the language that is spoken as the native tongue by the greatest number of Singaporeans. That's 1.2 million using it as their language at home. But nearly half a million speak other types of languages, such as Chinese, Hokkien, Teochew, and Cantonese as their home language. Although the use of these is declining in favour of Mandarin and English. And also, the writing, Singapore Chinese characters are written using simplified Chinese characters.
Well, that's really great. Like almost everybody speaks English. And then apart from that, they have like a second, more traditional language like Chinese or, yeah. You know, or Malay. That's incredible. That's really good. Now let's talk about some more culture now. Well, despite its small size, Singapore has a diversity of languages, religions and cultures. Okay. Former Prime Ministers of Singapore, Lee Kuan Yew and Goh Chok Tong, okay, have stated that Singapore does not fit the traditional description of a nation, calling it a society in transition. Pointing out the fact that Singaporeans do not all speak the same language or share the same religion or have the same customs, right? So even though English is the first language of the nation, according to the 2010 census, 20% of Singaporeans are illiterate in English. That means that they don't know any English, or they can't write English. This is, however, an improvement from 1990, where 40% of Singaporeans were illiterate in English. That is, that's clearly very positive. When Singapore became independent from the United Kingdom in 1963, most Singaporean citizens were uneducated labourers from Malaysia, China and India. Many were transient labourers seeking to make some money in Singapore with no intention of staying permanently. There was also a sizable minority of middle-class, locally born people known as Piranakans or Baba Nyonya, descendants of 15th and 16th century Chinese immigrants. With the exception of the Piranakans, who pledged their loyalties to Singapore, most of the labourers' loyalties lay with their respective homelands of Malaysia, China and India. Then after independence, the government began a deliberate process of crafting a Singaporean identity and culture. So basically, it's another melting pot in Asia, and we cannot really talk about one single cultural identity or even language or even, background. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. And now, you know, I can't think of anyone better than somebody who lives there to talk about Singapore. So now, we need to welcome, in a way, he's not here with us, but, you know, we need to welcome Marcos Rueda, right? That is our first Conquense around the globe, okay, in the programming. What's the fact? He's from, but he lives in Singapore, right? Agus, could you tell us some more about him?
Yeah, he's a chemist who works there since last year. And he's a very nice person, and I'm sure he's going to explain us some more curiosities about Singapore, but also important facts about living there and cultural, but also language. Mm-hmm. Because remember that this is an English program, so I'm expecting that mm-hmm. interview.
Because we don't expect him to speak any Malay or Tamil.
So, no. You know. And he probably doesn't know the names of the former prime ministers and everything. But,
all right.
But he lives there.
So let's listen to the interview, okay, with Marcos. And I hope you enjoy it. And it's a fresh new perspective, okay?
Okay.
Fog, I'm the one who made the bet. And I know we'll be exactly right on time. Fog is my name. I like the
So here we are with Marcos Rueda. It's a great pleasure. He is the first Conquense around the world who has accepted our call to participate in our program. So please, Marcos, tell us about your studies. What have you studied and which are your certificates?
Well, thank you very much, my dear friend Agustin, It's really a pleasure to participate in your radio program, and I'm really glad that the things are going good for you. So my studies, about my studies, I studied in the Alfonso VIII High School in Cuenca, and then I moved to Madrid to join the university, the Complutense University, to start my master's degree in biochemistry. I didn't finish it in 5 years, because as you can imagine, a young fellow going from the small city of Cuenca to the big city of Madrid, you can imagine that there were a lot of distractions and things that made the study really difficult. But at the end of the day, I finished it, and after that I went to a scholarship, the Leonardo Scholarship, that is an international scholarship that basically finds you a job overseas. In my case, I went to Cork in Ireland to start working as an intern in Alcon. And after that, I found a good opportunity in Barcelona, in the University of Barcelona, to start a master, a postgraduate course in molecular biotechnology. So I joined, I moved back to Spain to live in Barcelona, and I started this postgraduate course in molecular biotechnology. It was 1 year, and once I finished, I started working. And during my work, I felt the need of increasing my studies and my knowledge. So I joined another postgraduate course in Lean Six Sigma manufacturing and in the Polytechnic University of Barcelona as well. And I became a black belt, and that was in 2016. On top of this, and on regards of languages, I haven't really studied a lot of English. That's why my English level is not very, very good as other nationalities. But I have always tried to practice it and to live overseas during my Erasmus scholarship, during my Ireland scholarship. I have watched a lot of TV shows, a lot of movies, all of them in English with English subtitles. So in one way, I have always tried to have the English around me any way I could.
Thank you very much, Marcos. It's a pleasure. So could you tell us more about your career? In which places have you worked before?
As I anticipated in my previous answer, my real first experience in the work environment was in Cork, actually in Ireland. I worked as an intern in the microbiology lab, and basically, if I'm honest, it was kind of a waste of time, because the Corkonians, the Irish people, they speak a really tough English, like a really hard to understand them. So in terms of understanding each other and languages wise, it was very difficult. And also in terms of the actual work, I was like, I don't know if you have ever been an intern, but interns don't do much. They just do the shitty work. But anyway, it was a good life experience, I would say. After that, and because I joined Alcon is a big pharmaceutical manufacturing company, I found out in the internet that there was a manufacturing plant in Barcelona, where I happened to have a house. My grandmother's house is in Barcelona. And so I tried to make contact with them, with the Barcelona guys, and I managed to get another internship in the manufacturing plant in Barcelona. So what I did is, since to be an intern you have to be studying, I joined this postgraduate master course in molecular biotechnology, and I spent the first 1 year working as an intern in Alcon Barcelona during the morning, and then on the afternoons I was going to my master at the university. Once I finished my master, I got hired as a full-time employee in Alcon Barcelona, where I spent the rest 5 years working there. Less than 5 years, 4.5 years. Working there, developing my career as a validation engineer and learning a lot actually about all the pharmaceutical industry. And it was a very nice learning experience. But for a young guy in his 30s, it was not enough. I felt that I had enough of working there. I felt that I had learned as much as I could. So I felt the need of moving out again. And since Alcon and Novartis, that is the mothership of Alcon, it has a very big network all over the world. It has many manufacturing plants all over. I was looking for a job overseas, and I found a good opportunity in Singapore. And I happened to have visited Singapore 2 years ago on a diving trip to the Philippines, and I really love the city. I love the place. It is, they call it, Asia for Dummies. That means that it has the exotic atmosphere of Asia, but it's not that like the real Asia. It's a very Western place. And I have been working here already for 10 months, and so far so good. But to be honest, the beginning was really tough. The language was a really great barrier, a really great wall to overcome. But as with any other issue in life, you get over it. And right now I'm very happy. I'm happy at my job, I'm happy with my life, and I think that it has been a really good decision.
Thank you very much. And when you received the opportunity of working in Singapore, what was the first thing you thought about?
Well, as I have told you before, I didn't receive any opportunity. I was looking for it, but to try to answer your question, like when I was looking for a job overseas, I was like very excited, very eager to move out. So you are applying to many places, applying to many companies, different positions, really looking forward to move out. But then somebody replies, right? And when they replied, you start to feel, okay, so this can be serious, you know? So you start to get a little bit nervous, a little bit scared. Then you do the interview, just thinking, okay, I will do the interview, and if things go well, I will think about it. So you do the interview, and then after a couple of weeks, they reply you that they hire you. And that is when the real fear comes, you know, because you are like, okay, so now what do I do? Do I move out? It's a big change on my life. You know, a lot of things come to your mind. But as any other thing in life, you have to jump. You have to jump to the pool, not knowing if there is water inside or not. But you jump and you take a blind step, and I did it. But I'm honest, and I was really, really scared. I don't know what I was gotten myself into. It turned out very well, but it could have turned out very wrong.
Marcos, how important has been English in your professional life?
Well, knowing English has not been important in my professional life until now, until I moved out to Singapore. Before, it was something very useful to have in your resume to compete with other guys in order to get a job, but I didn't really use the English a lot in my work life before, until now, until Singapore. But now that I'm here, I can say that without knowing English, I couldn't be here. So yeah, it has been very important to achieve my goals.
Marcos, we have heard about Senglish. I'm sure it must be very difficult to understand and cope with. Can you explain it more things about it?
Oh, what a surprise. So you heard about Senglish. Maybe a friend of yours from Singapore told you something about it. So, yes, English is the way that the Singaporeans call their dialect, their English dialect. That is basically English grammar with a very strong Chinese accent, and very difficult to understand at the beginning. Also, well, it's not only the accent, but sometimes they throw words in between phrases, words like la, le, me, things like that you are not really sure if they belong to the sentence or to or this is another word that you are not aware of. But at the end, you realize that no, it's just some words that they use to emphasize maybe a concept or an attitude or a feeling. And if you wanna really know how it sounds, I encourage you to go to YouTube and try to look for some videos of Singaporeans speaking Singlish. It's really funny.
Marcos, could you tell us other little differences about living there?
Well, let me tell you, there is no such thing as little difference. There are huge differences, huge, and a lot of them. It's a completely different country, completely different planet from Spain. The food is completely different. All Chinese food, they enjoy a lot of spicy food. They like us enjoy salty food. Like we add salt to most of our dishes. They add chili. And they put it as a side plate, and on every restaurant that you go, you will have your small bowl full of chili, so you can put it in whatever you're eating. Also, they love chicken rice. They eat tons and tons of chicken rice. It's basically white rice with chicken. Rice as well. They eat a lot of rice. It's their bread. It's our bread. It's their rice. So with every dish that they go that they eat, they have a full bowl of rice, white rice. Something that is very different as well is the way they have fun. For us in Spain, having fun basically is going out, going to bars, drink, enjoy the city, going out. You know, be outside of your building. But here in Singapore, basically. They go to the shopping mall, for example, on a Friday or on a Saturday. They meet in the shopping mall. They have huge shopping malls with many stories, and you know, they're huge with a lot of restaurants, shops, and everything. And they spend the afternoon there or the evening eating and just doing nothing. Basically, I don't really understand the way they have fun, but you have to respect it anyway. And something that is very particular and that is actually a teaching that we the Spanish should learn is the multiculturalism. Like Singapore has Muslim people, Hindu people, Christian people, Buddhist, many religions, as well as many different languages, because English is the main language. Everybody speaks English. But then depending on the race that you are, like if you are Indian, you would speak Indian with your family or with your friends. If you are Malay, you would speak Malay, Indonesian, what's the name of the language? I don't remember. Anyway, if you are Filipino, you would speak Tagalog. And that's very, it's very interesting how they respect each other, how they have lived in this environment for so much time that they accept each other. And we should learn about that in Spain. And well, Agustin, I could keep going for hours, but I don't think you have enough time in your program. I would say just to summarize it that this is very different. And if you want to experience it, you have to come. And I really encourage you to come and to see how it's like.
Would you like to come back to Spain in the future?
Of course, my friend. Of course, I will go back to Spain for sure, definitely. I don't know when, because I actually have a pretty good life here. But Spain is Spain, my family is there, my friends are there, the food, my favorite food is there. I'm just waiting to get bored of Singapore, and to things to get better in Spain in terms of employment and economy. But as soon as I feel that it is the moment, that the money has, that the moment has come, I would definitely go back. Of course, I will have to find a job there and to talk to my company to see if I have some opportunity there. But for the moment, I will stay here a couple of years more, at least.
And what about Cuenca? Would you like to come back again?
Well, I was seeing you ask me this question, but you know me and you already know the answer, right? Of course, I would love to go to Cuenca. I love Cuenca. It's my favorite city in the world. But everybody knows how Cuenca is. There's no much thing to do there, no many jobs, and especially not technical jobs. So I don't know, maybe for retirement, maybe my idea is to come back to Madrid, and so I'm closer to Cuenca and I can go every weekend like some of my friends do. But yeah, Cuenca is the best.
Thank you very much, Marcos. I'm sure that the audience will appreciate your words. See you soon, my friend.
Well, Agustin, thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm really happy to talk to you, and I'm really looking forward to see you again, man. See you in July, maybe, in Torrecilla's wedding. Bye-bye.
Okay, right. So I hope you enjoyed our interview with Marcos. That was really cool. Like, you know, like somebody from here, from such a small place in the middle of Spain, living in Singapore. I think it's really amazing. And now this is almost the end. So Agus, what's on in Cuenca these days?
Okay, there are several things to do. So we are going to divide it in different sections. The first one is Cinema One. So you can go to the Cine Forum at Cine Club Chaplin. You know, it's in the Multicines Odeon. Mm-hmm. It's the session 22, the 22nd session. And it's going to be on the 18th, okay, of May. There are also some contests. The first one is Concurso Buscadores de Especies 2. We told it last week. And we also have the... it's until the 15th of May, sorry, because it's important to to highlight it. We have also another contest, that is El Primer Certamen de Creación Audiovisual para Jóvenes, Mi Ciudad es Patrimonio de Todos. And it was from April, and
the end is the end 1st of June, isn't it?
1st of June, yes. How do you say the last day? Is the daytime or no?
Not the deadline, no. But we don't use deadline there, no. Okay. It's like the last day, the closing day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there is also an exhibition, Jesse, Paisajes al Óleo. It's from the 10th of April to the 13th of May, so you can go there.
So hurry up.
Yeah, hurry up. And there are also some musical concerts. The first one is un concierto coral. It's in the music hall. And you can go there the 13th of May at 10 o'clock. In the afternoon, 10 o'clock p.m.
Well, that's actually today, so, you know, hurry up.
Yeah, hurry up too. And the last one is Cuarto Ciclo de Música de Cámara en las Ciudades Patrimonio de la Humanidad de España. It's also in the music hall. And it's on 20th of May, of course, and also at 8 o'clock. And that's all, Manu.
Okay, so thank you very much. Thanks very much, Agus. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for making this happen. And see you soon.
Yep.
All right, and Anna, thank you very much. Okay, sorry for getting you all the weird names. Yeah. All right, all the Latin texts.
That's okay.
Okay, I hope you're not too angry with us.
No.
All right, and this is Manuel García talking on the mic. See you very soon. Okay, see you next week.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Radio Libre de Cuenca. Radio Color, la radio libre de Cuenca.